and Now, introducing music by Julian Anderson. The performances were given earlier today at the BBC's Total Immersion event at London's Barbican Centre, featuring the BBC Singers, the BBC Symphony Orchestra and students of the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. Before that, at 9:30, Sarah Davis meets the producers and presenters of Radio Alwan, a Syrian radio station broadcasting independently and set up in response to the repression and civil war that followed the demonstrations of 2011. Right now, it's just 6:30, so time for Opera on Three, introduced by James Naughtie.
Welcome to the Royal Opera House for a performance of Otello by Giuseppe Verdi, his last but one opera and one of the jewels of the Italian repertoire. The German tenor Jonas Kaufmann leads an international cast here as Otello, the Moor of Venice, who loves not wisely but too well, and whose surrender to jealousy brings tragedy on him and to all those around him. Almost from the moment he appears on stage, in that opening storm scene as a hero of war, his headstrong descent towards destruction begins, driven by the schemes of his ensign Iago and his false belief in the betrayal of his new wife, Desdemona. An evening of great passion and drama, inspired by Shakespeare, the dramatist and poet whom Verdi most admired. This is a new production of the opera for the Royal Opera House after 30 years by Keith Warner. And it's conducted by the music director here at Covent Garden, Antonio Papano. And for him, this is the mature Verdi, with only Falstaff for the operatic stage to come, at his most powerful.
I think it's fair enough to say that Otello is Verdi's greatest achievement. It has everything. It has great roles for the singers. It has a story that, because of the way Verdi and Boito have shaped the Shakespeare, pared it down, made it more compact. It's a fantastic piece of theatre. It is lean and mean and ever so beautiful at the same time. And he says, here I am again after 15 years of not having written an opera, and boy, does he grab you by the throat.
Antonio Papano, well, more from the conductor later. Alongside Jonas Kaufmann, now one of the most cherished singers, of course, in the world stage, the Italian soprano Maria Agresta sings Desdemona, recently seen here at the Royal Opera House in two other Verdi roles as Violetta in La Traviata and Leonora in Il Trovatore. Another Italian, the baritone Marco Bratogna, takes the role of Iago, the character who takes an even more dominant part in the action in Boito's libretto for Verdi than he does in Shakespeare's play. And other leading roles are taken by Frédéric Antoun as Cassio, Thomas Atkins as Roderico, and Kai Rutel as Emilia. Well, with me here in our places near the stage at the Royal Opera House, what a treat, as the orchestra begins to come into the pit in preparation, as the Verdi scholar Dr. Flora Wilson of King's College London to throw some more light on the opera. Flora, as Tony Papano said, 15 years since Aida, more or less. And Verdi, in a sense, was dragged into this one, wasn't he?
He was. I mean, he'd been threatening to retire for so long by this point. And he really had the once rapid and extremely efficient Verdian production line had definitely slowed down. He hadn't been idle during this time. He'd actually, in the time since Aida, he'd revised Simon Boccanegra in an important way. He'd revised Don Carlo. And perhaps most importantly of all for this piece, he'd also written his Requiem. And it's that kind of range of emotion that we really hear in Otello, I think. It's that late style Verdi, if you like, that I think Papano is really getting at here. And we hear that right from the start of the opera with the storm scene, where it's just an unprecedented sort of unleashing of a sort of naturalist fury of music.
Yeah, the drama of that moment. And by the time people heard it in the mid-1880s, Verdi was in his 70s. He'd been a hero for, what, nearly 40 years. I mean, he really was at an extraordinary point in his career.
Yes, there's no question. He was the most famous living composer. I think what's interesting at this point in his career, though, is that Verdi, who was always extremely insecure, he really did feel himself to be under threat from a younger generation of composers. And this is where Boito, his librettist, would play an absolutely crucial role.
We'll come back to all this, but that's a wonderful introduction, Flora. Thank you very much indeed. We're going to hear Acts 1 and 2 in a moment, without a break, And remember, of course, you can read a detailed synopsis of the opera and see photographs, indeed, of this production on the opera page of the BBC Radio 3 website. Now, in this opera, we're in Cyprus, part of the Venetian Empire, where everyone is celebrating a very important naval victory over the Turkish enemy. And in the midst of a great storm, with the orchestra, as Flora said, plus organ, giving it full blast, the people are looking for a sign that the ship carrying the hero of the hour is safe. They're watching for a sail, and they rejoice when Otello, the Moor, who's just become governor of the island, leaps ashore with his great cry of victory, and the audience will see him rising out of the crowd. Esultate, he cries. But in this production, even before the storm, we have seen the figure of Iago, his ensign, gripped by anger at the promotion of his rival Cassio. He'll appear at the front of the stage even before the action begins. And his plan, of course, becomes clear very quickly. Young Rodrigo has followed Otello and his young wife Desdemona to Cyprus because he is in love with her. And Iago, determined on revenge against Otello, offers to help him, making him the unwitting agent of his plot. The crowd is swarming around Otello, of course, and already Iago's plan is unfolding. He gets Cassio drunk, not very difficult apparently, then he sets his supposed friend Rodrigo against Cassio by suggesting that Cassio loves Desdemona as well. Well, Cassio ends up in a fight with Otello's predecessor as governor, Montano, and Iago makes absolutely sure that Rodrigo gets the whole town out to watch the spectacle. Otello removes the captaincy that he's given to Cassio and demotes him in disgrace. Iago professes mystification in the full knowledge that his plot is working. Well, from the confusion of his arrival and the upheaval with Cassio, we're taken to Desdemona's bedroom, where she and Otello sing a melting love duet. He says he loves her for her compassion, she that she understands all the difficulties that preceded his rise to power. They share a kiss, un bacio, and Act One ends with Desdemona praying for happiness that will last. The opening of Act Two is dominated by Iago's own description of his nature, which he knows to be black. His credo is a chilling account of his own cynicism. He was created, he says, by a cruel god. His plot is now moving quite quickly. He's already making suggestions to Otello that Cassio is too close to Desdemona. The governor is distracted by a group of townsfolk who come with their children to serenade his wife, but when she starts to plead Cassio's case, at the urging of Iago, of course, all his suspicions are reawakened. He's very angry, he tosses aside the handkerchief, which was a gift from him, that Desdemona offers him. It is picked up by her attendant Emilia, who is also Iago's wife. And quietly, Iago gets her to hand it over. It will be, of course, an instrument in his plot. Otello's jealousy has now taken him over. He sings about the loss of happiness, and Iago stokes up his feelings with great relish. He says he's heard Cassio talking in his sleep about Desdemona. The evidence, Iago says, may be that embroidered handkerchief, which he says he has seen in Cassio's hand. Otello, in an instant, is convinced. At the end of Act Two, he is bent on vengeance. Iago and Otello appear to be together, united in anger. Desdemona and Cassio will be punished. It's a story, Flora, that unfolds with such speed and compression. Those first two acts are bewildering in their pace, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, Verdi was always an extremely efficient composer as far as expression was concerned. And actually, one of the major changes that Boito, the librettist, made to Shakespeare's opera was to actually lose the entire first act, the act in Venice, which just gives you the backstory. It just went. And as he said, he understood that an opera is not a play, he said. And he said to Verdi that 8 bars of music, he realised, were enough to restore feeling to life, that Verdi could pack into a very, very short time enough emotion to make sense of an entire act of Shakespeare. And I think he was onto something here.
It's interesting, I mean, you mentioned this earlier, but Boito, the librettist, and Ricordi, the publisher, were terribly important in pushing Verdi you know, at a fairly advanced age into this triumph.
Yes, they were absolutely crucial. In different ways, I think. Ricordi, the publisher, was absolutely essential in sort of manipulating Verdi, if you like, into continuing to produce operas far beyond when Verdi actually wanted to. Boito, on the other hand, was crucial in giving Verdi a link to the modern musical world, if you like. Boito had himself been a composer, was still a composer, in fact, but he'd increasingly become a librettist in his own right, and as he'd aged, he'd ceased to be the kind of firebrand he was in his youth in the 1860s, and instead had sort of joined Verdi as a link between the new firebrands, if you like, who were just coming up, the Mascagnis, the Leoncavallos, the Puccinis even, and Verdi's own sort of advanced statesman-like status.
And what we hear in these first two acts, let's not forget, is some music that will carry people away. I mean, there are highlights, that love duet introduced by those extraordinarily moving cellos.
Absolutely.
When Desdemona and Otello first seen together, to Iago's Credo. I mean, these are great moments in opera.
They are. I mean, the thing about Verdi's sort of late style, if you do want to call it that, is that this is Italian opera that's begun to blur at the edges. It's no longer a form that's all about strict numbers. The park and bark moment has gone. But what we've got here is the kind of vestiges of it, if you like. And so in amidst this kind of Wagnerian-influenced through composed opera, you do have these moments of extraordinary lyricism. And yes, that love duet in the first act is absolutely, it stands out in this opera, which is so dark, for its sort of its lightness and its lyricism, for the fact that, as Boito said, Verdi packs into it the entire backstory of Otello falling in love with Desdemona.
And by the end of Act 1 and 2, although we may think he's being daft, we understand him entirely.
Exactly. I mean, I think the kind of great difficulty of this opera is Iago is just so evil, he is so black, that the danger is that Otello starts seeming a bit dim-witted, if we're completely honest. We may just not find the compassion that we need. But that love duet in Act 1, that's setting the tone, that is creating the empathy that we need.
Prepare to live through all that. Flora, for the moment, thank you very much. The audience here in the Royal Opera House is settling down for a moment of reflection, perhaps, before the drama and the passion of this orchestra. The orchestra of the Royal Opera House are in their places in the pit below us. Antonio Pappano, music director here at Covent Garden, is already in his place. He won't have a walk on before the first act because the curtain will rise and we'll see Iago before that great storm scene. Let's listen to Acts 1 and 2 of Verdi's Otello.
Amen. anni sporco e chi s'affoga per amor di donna.
Vincer non so.
Su via, fascino, aspetta l'opera del tempo. A Desdemona bella, che nel segreto dei tuoi sogni adori, presto in uncia verranno i foschi baci di quel selvaggio dalle gonfie rabbia. Guarrò perigo, amico tuo sincero, mi ti professo, nel più forte ambascia soccorrere ti potrei. Se un fragil voto di femmina non è troppo arco, noto del genio mio ne per l'inferno. Giuro che quella donna sarà tua. Ma ascolta, che finga d'amarlo, odio quel moro, è una cagion dell'ira, eccola, guarda. Quella zimato capitano, usurre quel grado mio, il grado mio, ten 120 pugnate battaglie ho meritato. Sul voler d'Otello ed io rimando di suo amore stato signoria dalle vie. Ma com'è vero che tu Rodrigo sei, così è pur vero che se il morio fossi, vedermi non vorrei d'attorno miato. Se tu m'ascolti,
thank you. fiar. Palazza capita,
non vedo
più. In paia questo sorso. Guarda, oggi passa tutta cento. È una notte di gioia, dunque.
Cessa, chiamate cervello per un tratto affogato.
Sì, ancora per me. Alle nozze d'Otello che le spiega.
Passa in fiora questo lio col vano suo raggiare chiama in coriana volta.
Pur modesta essa e canto
tu iano canterai le sue lodi.
L'ascolta. Io non sono che un critico.
E nella d'ogni lode più bella.
Guarda da quel Cassio.
Che temi?
Ehi, favella già con troppo color. La gagliarda giovinezza lo sprona. È un stupido sul cuore che mi corre cammino. Ma la legge si è fatta bene. E qua, ragazzi, delle pino.
Sigratulco,
Amici di anzi e giocondi, ma ad un tratto come se un pianeta maligno avesse a quelli smagati il senno, sguainando l'arte s'avventano furenti. Avessi io prima stroncati i pie e qui m'addussere.
Passio, ove mi astite spesso a tal segno.
Grazia, perdon, parlar non so.
Montano,
sono ferito.
Ferita, il cielo c'è sangue mio ripoglie. Venire a me, il cielo è la nostra tutela.
Mio dolce Desdemona, anch'essa per voi disporta la sua sogni.
Cassio non sei più capitano.
Oh mio trio,
piano, va nella città sovente, con quella squadra ricoppar la pace. Si soccorra Boteno, al proprio petto ritorni agnon. Io da qui non mi parto, se prima non è vero di certi
Thank you. Scendean sulle mie tenebre la gloria e paradiso.
Thank you. Ti cruciar se credi a me Tra poco farà ritorno ai folleggianti amori di monna Bianca. Altiero capitano, con l'Elsanore, col Palteo fregiano.
Non lusingarmi.
Attendi a ciò che io dico.
Tu di sapere che Desdemona è il duce del nostro duce. Sol per essa vive,
fregala tu, quell'anima cortese per te interceda. E il tuo perdono è certo,
ma come favellarle?
E il suo costume giresi in amiciare fra quelle fronde con la consorte mia.
Quivi l'aspetta.
Porta aperta la via di salvazione, vanne. Falle, la tua meta c'ha vero, mi spinge il tuo timore. Di monsonio e ne trascina il mio, del quale io credo inesorato in Dio.
nulla. Questo è il momento, ti scuoti, vien Desdemona. Semos la saluta e s'avvicina. Perfis si tragotero, aiuta, aiuta Satana, il mio cimento. Ci attraversano insieme. Ed si inclina sorridendo il bel viso, mi passa un lampo sul di quel sorriso per trascinare o terra alla rovina. Andiamo, ma in caso mio favore s'adopra, ecco al posto all'opera. M'accora.
Che parli?
Nulla. Voi qui. Una vana voce m'usci dal labbro.
Colui che s'allontana dalla mia sposa è Cassio.
Cassio? No.
Quei si scasse come un reo nel vedervi.
Credo che Cassio il fosse.
Mio signore.
Che bravi.
Cassio, nei primi dì del vostro amor, Desdemona non conosceva.
Sì. Perché fai tal'inchiesta?
Il mio pensiero è vago, tu qui, non ti malizia.
Il tuo pensiero, Iago,
vi confido.
Son mio dono ne cenno, portava la mia sposa.
D'assenno?
Sì, d'assenno. Ol credi onesto?
Onesto.
Che affondi nel tuo cuore?
Che ascondo in cuore, signore?
Ti ascondo in cuore, signore. Al cielo tu sei letto dei lieti miei, nel fiostro dell'anima i ciechi, mal che terribile. Sì, vento di focanci mormorar, ciò m'accora, ma di che t'accorravi, nomini Cassio? E allora tu corrugi la fronte, sovvea per la cevale.
E voi sapete che ho fatto.
Dunque senza velarmi, esprime senza fare. E sciafare la cara, il papiario pensiero, con la più ria parola.
E santo tenesti in mano tutta l'anima mia. Non sapreste che mette, signor, la gelosia.
E l'idra fosca libida cieca col suo veleno se stessa.
Oh. dimora di Cassio ciò s'asconda atroce idea da volontà reo contro me
soffri e ruggi
atroce atroce non pensateci più vieno con te.
Thank you.
fulgenta Dio vittoria. Parli volate e volanti corsieri. Addio, addio messia, Dio fare via, e di ale sfilanti sui fatti. L'amore è falsi di battaglia, addio.
Pace, signor!
Sciagurato! Mi trovano prova sicura e ricevono e cura! Non sfuggì, non sfuggì, non la diciova! Ora sicura le vicini prova! Oh, sulla tua festa! Facete vicini! Il fulmine è mio! Saver cosa farà che si desta!
Non so più vostro alfiere, voglio che il mondo testimon vi sia che l'onestà è perita.
Ah, rimani, forse onesto sei.
Meglio varrebbe che io fossi un ciurmador.
Per l'universo, quello di ore ti stai mo.
Che non lo sia.
E credo ne so.
E credo di siere.
La prova la voglio. Voglio la certezza.
Signore, frenate l'ansia. E quale certezza bisogna. Avvinti vederli forse.
Forse che l'azione!
Ardua impresa sarebbe. E qual certezza sognate voi se quelli mondo fatto sempre vi sfuggirà? Ma pur se guida è la ragione al vero, una sì forte congettura riservo, che per poco alla certezza vi conduce. Udite. Canto con interrotte voci tradia l'intimo incanto e la lente lente movea dell'abbandono del sogno ardente e allor dicea con flebil suono che spero restare il nostro amore s'asconda cautive gli amore l'estasi del cielo l'interno è vago quasi baciato
se poscia il rio destino impreco che al moro titolo.
E allora il cieco letargo si muta.
O mostruosa colpa,
io non narrai che
un sogno terribile affatto,
un sogno che può dar forma di prova ad altro indizio.
E qual?
Talor vedeste in mano di Desdemona
un tessuto trapunto a fior
e più sottile d'un velo.
E il fazzoletto io le diedi pegno
il fazzoletto ieri certo ne suone
lo vidi in man di Cassio.
Oh!
Otello and Iago alone on the stage at the end of Act Two of Verdi's Otello, from the Royal Opera House, conducted by Antonio Pappano, with Jonas Kaufmann as Otello, Maria Agresta as Desdemona, and Marco Bretogna there as Iago. A wonderful reaction here from the audience, packed, of course, in the Royal Opera House. Flora Wilson here with me. What drama at the end of Act Two there?
It is high drama. It's absolutely relentless, that sort of development of a character. And I think the moment, if you had to pick one, that matters above all in those two acts is the moment where Iago says, gelosia, jealousy. And that is the transformational word. After that, all is really lost for Otello. We've heard him sort of bid farewell to his past life, if you like, in the march just a few minutes ago. And we're going to gradually see his sort of here, indeed, his descent into effectively madness from this point on.
From the point of view of the singer playing Otello, it's an extraordinarily quick transition from triumph to impending disaster, to the fracture of his emotional soul. And you have to try to get it really quite quickly.
This is where Kaufmann actually comes into his own here. You know, he's a singer who's famous these days for those pianissimi, those very, very quiet moments. And we actually sort of hear right from the start of this performance that he's got the sort of edge, he's got the aggression, he can do the virile Verdian tenor thing. But he also, you know, the moment that Desdemona comes on stage briefly in Act One, at the beginning, we hear an instant softening. He's got that sort of, that softness, that gentleness. And interestingly, Tamagno, who was the first person to sing the role for Verdi in the 1880s, he was a singer famous for his forcefulness, to the extent, actually, that apparently he couldn't sing quietly at all. He was sort of the opposite of Kaufmann, if you like. Verdi actually said he must not be allowed to sing piano, absolutely against all, you know, no matter what happens. If he sings softly, his tuning goes and it sounds ugly.
But it's better now.
It certainly is.
Well, here's tonight's conductor, Antonio Pappano, on the vocal character of Verdi's score in Otello.
Verdi, for the role of Otello, chooses a tessitura, or range, a vocal range, that spends a lot of time in the middle register. So a lot has been made of the necessity of the singer who sings Otello to have that almost baritonal quality. And if you don't have it, you try to invent it. Singers will sing extra dark to get that color, and it can play havoc on your vocal cords. You really have to be ready to sing this part, because the emotional challenges, not so much the vocal challenges are there, but it's not more difficult than many parts. But when you put the baggage, the suspicion that Iago seeds, and the jealousy, paranoia, and then the singing becomes incredibly weighted down.
Weighed down indeed, Antonio Pappano, music director, of course, at the Royal Opera House, on Otello. And we can hear now from tonight's Moor of Venice, Jonas Kaufmann. I spoke to him during rehearsals for these performances, and he described the challenges of a role that he's singing at the very height of his career for the first time.
You actually are forced to show also the human side, the beauty, the tenderness, the softness in this character. In Shakespeare, of course, I mean, you can, but it is much darker and much more violent. It's really like an animal. So you have the esultate at the very beginning, you have the abbasso le spade when he comes in really crazy because of the disturbance and the drunken people outside after hours, and then you have the beauty of the love duet, which is actually the only moment where you can really talk about proper love and relationship. And even there, he's always mentioning his battlefield, he's always mentioning his big success, and it's just very difficult for him to actually talk about private stuff, it seems. And that shows me that we have someone who has no experience whatsoever in love and in relationship to women. It's an enemy that he never came across.
Your challenge, you think, in playing Otello, singing Otello, is to explain or project vulnerability.
Well, you have to, because it's similar to the relationship with Iago. I mean, why would he trust this man so much? I think the reason is battle, because you need allies, you need those people out there whom you can trust 100%, because your life relies on that. So I think they have such a strong history together that there's no doubt that he has to trust him. And I think is a similar thing there. If you once bond and if you just say, this is it, it means for life, and therefore it makes it so difficult for him. And you have the A terra I piangi, you have the Nun mi tema, you have Dio mi potevi scagliar tutti I mali. And this is very dark, and he's completely destroyed. I mean, it feels so depressive also for the audience immediately. So, I mean, he's found a language, Verdi, here, that is so unique and so strong.
Well, the humanity of Verdi is so obvious, isn't it? His understanding of, for example, the relationship between Otello and Iago, which you talk about, the way he could project those male relationships with all their ambiguities, as in Don Carlo, is extraordinary in the way those voices combine and the minds try to sort out their affection and their rivalry.
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned Don Carlos. It's absolutely true. It's one of the best baritone tenor duets ever written. Think of the three duets in Forza del Destino, where we have, they're actually enemies, but it's somehow, I mean, it's written in a way. So you totally understand that he was on top of that idea of the relationship between men. And then we come to Otello and we have the mix of the two. We have the complete trust as we have in Don Carlos. And at the same time, it's wrong. It's a lie. And so you have those double layers and these moments where you think, wow, is he really still believing in it? So it's done in an astonishingly mastery.
And for people who don't know opera, who are not opera goers or opera lovers, it's worth saying that this is drama, which is as clear as anything you would see on the straight stage, that this is a way of discussing, you know, human affairs that is so visceral that it hits you in the face.
It completely does. And I can tell you that even the greatest actors told me that they envy a lot the fact that we have the music underneath, because they have to create everything from zero, and we are in the luxurious position. We just lean back and let the audience be prepared by the orchestra.
And of course, in this role, in which you dominate the stage more or less from beginning to end, you're singing this baritonal role in many ways, which demands depth and strength, but it also demands alongside it enormous tenderness. You're going to murder your lover. I mean, I don't think that's giving anything away. But it involves a delicacy and a tenderness alongside the trumpet sound of a warrior.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's this back and forth, and I think that would ultimately destroys him. And you can see that in Act 3, that he's going back and forth all the time, even though he's sworn this oath at the end of Act 2. He just can't believe it. I mean, there's proof and more proof and more proof. And then once the story with the handkerchief appears, and then he just has to believe it. And he says, the proof you've been offering, this is your proof you've always wanted. And dangerously, spaventoso, or frighteningly, he's holding it towards the sun. So it means he actually, up to that moment, did hope that the ultimate proof won't appear and Iago would be lying.
Well, you've scaled all the mountain peaks of the operatic repertoire as a tenor, but this is an alpine peak, Otello, that's higher than most others. How big a challenge has it been for you in your head and in your voice?
A very big one. I mean, that was the reason why I avoided this part for a long time. From the moment my voice started to get darker and darker, I mean, I got offers from everywhere to obviously do Otello because this is the voice for it. And I was struggling to accept them because I knew I need a lot of experience to master this part, because it just forces you to do more than, not more than needed, but more than is actually healthy. And it is not only a peak, it is also a low and very high part. I mean, you have, I think the lowest is a B-flat or something down there, way into the baritonal register, and it's not the low note at itself, it's just that a lot of very expressive, very strong stuff happens in the lower part of the voice. So you need to have that power to push through the orchestra, and yet it's the only actually written high C for a tenor in this thing. Even the trovatore C is only optional. This is the only proper one, and the purists and the conductors like Riccardo Muti, who always try to not let the singer sing the optional high note, because he's absolutely convinced that this has been only put in on demand, forced by the tenors of the time. But this one is the only, actually. So it is really Otello as the character who is being drawn or pulled apart almost by the dark side of Iago and the bright side of Desdemona, so is also vocally. And when you look, for instance, in Act 4, her prayer, her Salce, it ends so beautiful, and the violins, I mean, really on the Olympus up there. And then the next note you hear is from the double basses, beep, 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 and it's just so frightening, really. And the beginning, I mean, I think there's no other opera ever written with such a strong start, as if somebody opens the lid of Pandora's box and out jumps the whole chaos, and it's fantastic. And you have even an organ who plays one super low note throughout the entire first scene, nothing but up to the very end when the Fuoco di Gioia starts, and to just give this extra bit of nervousness and darkness. And so he was playing with colors.
Don't know about the organ sound there. That was Jonas Kaufmann, the wonderful Otello tonight, being celebrated here at the Royal Opera House with me, Dr. Flora Wilson, Verdi scholar, enjoying this performance. And all the talk there of the wonderful emotional range that's required of a singer. What about the production here now? The Elijah Mashinsky one ran for, what, 30 years, mm-hmm. running from the days when Domingo was at his peak, you know, and he commanded this role. This is much darker. It was controversial among the critics. What do you make of it, and how would you describe it?
It is. I mean, it's an interesting production. It's extremely abstract, I think, is one thing we should say. It is effectively a black box production, as they call them. And within that dark, very stark space, we've got the characters in broadly historical costumes, but stylized historical costumes. There's not an enormous amount to look at a lot of the time. You could see that as extremely effective. It's quite claustrophobic in its own way.
You have to focus on the characters themselves.
You absolutely do. I think in all kinds of ways, this is a production that is going to look fantastic on camera in the cinemas. For anyone who can get to those broadcasts, it's going to look amazing. I would say for anyone who's not sat quite close to the front of the theatre, it's actually a bit of a challenge to see all the details, and that is always a shame if that's the leap you're being asked to make. On the other hand, there are some really strong images, the sort of Moorish latticing that lots of critics have noticed. It is a really interesting thing to be looking at, these sort of screens that slide around. We're seeing the complexity of Iago's plots, as well as the sort of the Moorish background of Otello himself.
And we move into the emotional heart of the opera now, as we go into Acts 3 and 4 of Verdi's Otello, which we're going to hear with only a brief pause between them. Iago's plot is deepening. He tells Otello that he's going to have more proof of his wife's unfaithfulness. And when Desdemona tries again to ask that Cassio be reinstated as captain, Otello's jealousy really takes him over. He pretends to have a headache. He asks for that embroidered handkerchief, the gift, of course, he gave her. She's lost it, and Otello warns her of the consequences. When he's alone, he allows all that anger and, indeed, self-pity to overcome him. Iago, of course, is ready to finish everything. He says that if Otello hides and listens, he will hear proof of his wife's treachery. Now, Iago conducts a conversation with Cassio about his real love, Bianca, and Otello only hears enough to imagine that Iago is talking about Desdemona with Cassio. When Cassio produces the handkerchief planted by Iago, Otello needs nothing more. He's convinced. And with Iago prompting him, he says that his wife must die. He will suffocate her in bed that night. And first, Iago is promoted in Cassio's place. His revenge is nearly complete. We see a huge representation on stage now of the Lion of Venice, the famous sign of St. Mark. As an ambassador from the city, Lodovico summons the triumphant Otello home and announces that Cassio is going to be appointed governor after him. Otello's rage spills out in front of the crowd, and he denounces his wife. He sends everyone away, and he collapses in a swoon of some kind. Even as the crowd can still be heard cheering, Iago is gloating over the fallen Lion of Venice. In Act 4, which follows, the tragedy is complete. Desdemona, preparing for sleep, sings the famous Willow Song about a woman abandoned by her lover. She confesses to her attendant Emilia, Iago's wife, her fears that her own death is near. And before sleep, she prays. Otello wakes her with a kiss, but there is no love left. He demands that she confess her adultery before he kills her. She can't persuade him of her innocence, though she tries, and he ignores all her pleas for mercy. He smothers her in her bed. Emilia runs in too late. She says that Cassio has killed Rodrigo, and hears Desdemona once again protesting her innocence with her last breath. In all the confusion that follows, with soldiers swarming all around, Cassio and the former governor, Montano, reveal Iago's deception, and he flees. Otello is overcome with remorse, and he stabs himself. As he dies, he begs for one more kiss from Desdemona, but everything is over. The last moments of this opera, Flora, are quite extraordinary.
They certainly are. I mean, I think, though, we should probably rewind a little to Desdemona's moments, though, in Act 4, which for me are some of the most extraordinarily poignant, moving music in all of Verdi. I mean, it's excruciating that after all this time, so much male music, if you like, throughout this opera, we've heard so much from both Iago and Otello, and Desdemona finally gets this extraordinary swan song of the Willow Song, followed by the Ave Maria, and it's just heartbreaking. She's the one character who doesn't really travel anywhere in this opera. She is, as Verdi described her originally, she's a type. She's an ideal character of woman as goodness, whereas both Otello and Iago, of course, they're so complex in their sort of humanity. She's just so pure throughout, but it's so beautiful.
It all happens to her.
It does. She
does nothing to
victim.
Make it come about.
Exactly, and that is what I think is so heartbreaking about this. I think the other thing we should say is just the importance of the orchestra throughout this opera. I mean, Verdi, by this point in his career, had honed such extraordinary orchestral technique. The orchestra is almost like another character. We get so much from it, and especially from this point on in the opera, where it's such a complex piece, it's so much ambivalence. We're really hearing that throughout.
Jonas Kaufmann talked about what's required from the voice in the part of Otello. In the orchestra, you hear those wonderful deep tones in the strings, the cellos in the love duet in Act 1,
exactly.
Right,
I mean,
through to the
that
end.
That cello quartet is extraordinary. We're hearing the intimacy of their relationship at that moment. After so much grand, full orchestral writing, we suddenly focus in on this sort of minute, almost chamber ensemble, if you like, and yet we're straight back to sort of a full unison orchestra with brass for that sort of the evil introduction to Iago's credo. I mean, he's got it all there.
And in a moment, Act 3 and Act 4 of Verdi's Otello. The lights dim in the Royal Opera House, and Antonio Papano, music director here, comes into the pit to great cheers to bring the orchestra of the Royal Opera. Vasco Vasiliev, concertmaster, there in his place and shaking hands with the conductor to get the cheers of this audience as he prepares to conduct Acts 3 and 4 of Verdi's Otello.
vedetta del porto ha segnalato la veneta galea e a Cipro adduce gli ambasciatori.
Bene sta. Continua,
vi trarrò Cassio e con astute inchieste lo addescherò a ciarlare. Voi l'ha nascosto, scrutate i modi suoi, le sue parole, i lazzi, i gesti, paziente siate, una prova vi sfugge. Ecco Desdemona, finger conviene, io vado. Il fazzoletto.
Ah! Volontieri, obbligato l'avrei.
Sventura,
fazzoletto.
Thank you. Quel sol, quel sorriso, quel raggio che mi fa via.
Nascondi.
tua cor, la tua causa in tal mano che la vittoria è certa.
Io qui credea di ritrovar Desdemona.
Elanoa!
Vorrei parlarle ancora per saper se la mia grazia è profferta.
L'attendi. E intanto, già che non si stanca mai la tua lingua delle fuori gaie, narrami un po' di lei che ti innamora.
Di chi?
Di Bianca.
Sorride, gaie.
E Satan vince, quel vai dirai, per ride chi vince.
In tai di sfide per verità, vince chi ride, ha ha!
Ha ha!
E da trionfo, il suo scherno uccide, io frena l'ansia che d'ore mi sta. Baci sazio di lei,
rider mi fai,
amor fugaci.
Ma che gir regno d'alta beltà, e colgo nel segno,
ha ha! Il suo sfero uccide, io prenaccio che cuore mi sta. Nel segno in colpo, sì, lo confesso, ma di
son messo parla, t'ascolto.
Iago, te nota la mia dimora.
Voglio la colpa, il modo, il luogo e l'ora.
Da mano ignota.
E parare da loro, io sappia dire vorrei.
Un bel trapunto.
È strano, è strano.
Avvicinarmi, apri facenno.
Dai, nota mano, vai.
Da senno. Quando mi torna a saper chi sia.
Fratello spia. L'hai detto.
Guarda.
Qual meraviglia. Loria, essa vicina con mosse accorte. Bel cavaliere, nel vostro stello perdono gli angeli l'aureola e il
fello. E qui, e quello, qui noi morte.
Mario, tello,
tutto spento, amori tuoi. L'arma mia nessun più smuova.
Questa naragna dove il tuo cuor casca si lagna, si pigli e muor. Troppo la miri, troppo la guardi, vada i deliri, vani e bugiardi. Questa naragna dove il tuo cuor casca si lagna, si pigli e muor. Questa naragna dove il tuo cuor casca si lagna, si pigli e muor.
Miracolo vago nell'astro del lago, che in raggi trovo.
Sono la hagna dove tu cor, casca si la gnasi piglia e muor. Sono la hagna dove tu cor, casca si la gnasi piglia e muor. Proprio la gola, 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 la
l'alimento.
Vada, vada. Questo
questo è segnale che annuncia l'approdo della trireme veneziana. Ascolta! Tutto il castel così stili risponde. Se chi non vuoi con Otello scontare, ti fuggi, addio, va! Come la scena! Per esse vento degli arriso, bene, e il fazzoletto, poco bene! Questa notte il toscano al meglio soffocarla là nel suo letto là dove ha peccato. Questa giustizia tua mi piace, a Cassio Iago provvederà. Iago, finora mi è capitano, te leggo luce, grazie mi prendo. Ecco gli ambasciatori, li accogliete, ma dei viter sospetti, estremo ora si mostri a quei messeri, qui a notte.
Iago, quali nuove? Ma in mezzo a voi non trovo Cassio.
Con lui Cruciato e Otello.
Credo che Grazia tornerà.
Ne siete certa? E legge, non vi pare?
Forse che in grazia tornerà.
Iago, lo spero.
Dunque le labbra lo quasi.
Guardate, signor!
Le mani a terra c'è!
Orrore, orrore!
La mente mia non osa pensar che io vidi il vero.
Vabbè, passio!
pretenti, andrò mentre giunge. Dunque l'eroe, questo è il guerriero dai sublimi ardimenti, e quel che gli è, palesa il tuo pensiero, meglio è tenere su ciò la lingua muta. Eccolo, è lui, e l'animo lo scruta. Messeri, il toce,
e tu fingi il pianto,
mi richiama Venezia,
sorte.
E in Cipro legge mio successor, colui che stava accanto al mio vessillo, Cassio,
inferno d'orbiti,
la parola ducale nostra legge.
Obbedirò.
Vedi, non par che giulti l'infame.
No!
Piacciurme la corte,
continua i tuoi singolti,
e le navi e il castello lascia in potente il nuovo duce.
Otello, per pietà, la concorda e torna in frangi.
Noi salteremo domani.
Thank you. Ascolta! Oh, non lamento! Tace! Thank you. Mentitrice, io li uccisi.
L'assassino!
Fu di Cassio la druva, a Iago il chiedi.
A Iago!
A Iago!
Stonto, tu ingredessi!
Che cosa dici?
Non ti temo!
Vada!
Soccorso, aiuto! O te mi uccise destino!
stanca e muta. E maligna stella.
the conclusion of Verdi's Otello, coming to you from the Royal Opera House, conducted by Antonio Pappano with the orchestra of the Royal Opera House. And a packed audience here responding to the tragedy that has just unfolded before them and that extraordinary conclusion on the stage here at Covent Garden. The curtain rises and the cheers ring out for the principals, Rodrigo Cassio, Emilia, Otello, Desdemona, Iago, Lodovico and Montano, as they take the first of their bows in the front of the stage, led by Jonas Kaufmann as Otello. After this performance in a new production by Keith Warner for the Royal Opera House, the first for 30 years or so of this opera, a change from the Eladio Mashinsky production, which was known here for so many years. And Jonas Kaufmann, on his birthday, singing his first Otello. The first group of actors to take their bow, and we shouldn't forget the chorus of the Royal Opera, which played such an extraordinary part in this production. William Spalding, their director. Now we see Rodrigo, Ludvigo, Montano taking their bows. And one by one, the principals will now come on. Emilia, sung by Kai Ruto. Cassio, Frederico Ton. Iago, Marco Bratogna, Italian baritone, getting a huge cheer from this audience, the man who appeared even before the action began on the stage to indicate his evil intent as he began to scheme his schemes. An enormous cheer for Maria Agresta, tonight's Desdemona. A familiar figure now on this stage, the Italian soprano, whose performance in those last two acts caught the hearts of this audience here. She applauds the other performers on the stage and moves back to join them as the audience welcomes tonight's Otello, Jonas Kaufmann. Naturally stained with some blood as he acknowledges the applause. After singing the lead role in Verdi's tragedy, his last before that final opera in comedic form, Falstaff, about a decade later, he leads the whole cast to the front of the stage and they take their bow. The orchestra was led by Vasco Vasiliev. And Antonio Pappano, tonight's conductor, music director here at Covent Garden, brings the whole orchestra to its feet to a great cheer from the Covent Garden audience. The last of these Otellos, which will be led by Kaufmann, Antonio Pappano now leads all the principals to the front of the stage, where they acknowledge the enthusiastic reception of this huge audience on a sweltering London evening. And that brings to an end this performance of Verdi's Otello, coming to you from the Royal Opera House. Our thanks to Flora Wilson for her insights in the course of the evening. And we do all hope that you've enjoyed the opera. To the sound of continued applause here at Covent Garden, I'll hand you back now to the studio for the rest of the evening on BBC Radio 3.
Thank you, James Naughtie, there. And in Thursday's Opera Matinee, you can hear a performance of Mozart's Don Giovanni, starring Philip Sly, with Le Cercle de l'Harmonie, conducted by Jeremy Horay. And next Saturday, with Opera on Three, you can hear Wagner's Tannhäuser, starring Peter Seifert, Christian Gerheyer, Emma Bell and Sophie Koch. That's with the Royal Opera House Chorus and Orchestra, conducted by Hartmut Heinchen.
Slow Radio. An antidote to today's frenzied world. Slow Radio, a new podcast from BBC Radio 3. To find out more, visit the Radio 3 website.
And you can go there as quick as you like, apparently. Good evening, this is BBC Radio 3, and I'm Chris Barrow. At 10 o'clock, Kate Mollison presents Here and Now, introducing music by Julian Anderson. The performances were given earlier today at the BBC's Total Immersion event at London's Barbican Centre. And it features the BBC singers, the BBC Symphony Orchestra and students of the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. Before that, at 9:30, last year in Between the Ears, we broadcast Inside Radio Alwyn, the story of a Syrian radio station, Alwyn FM, which is broadcasting back into Syria from a studio in Istanbul. The station has survived another year of exile, and despite the chaos of continuing war, has even managed to re-establish a daily live show from the Syrian city of Sarakub. This is another opportunity to hear Sarah Davis's programme about the station and the people who created it.
الواحدة ظهرا بتوقيت دمشق.
نشرة الأخبار المفصلة من راديو ألوان.
أهلا وسهلا بكم مستمعينا في النشرة الإخبارية الرئيسية والمفصلة من راديو ألوان، ونبدأ معكم من الشأن الميداني وفي عناوينه.
I left Syria because I had nothing there. My home destroyed. My brother died also. I had nothing. Now I'm living alone. My colleagues like brother and sister for me.
استمرار المعارك على جبهة حرب نفسه بحماه والمعارضة تتصدى للنظام.
I miss my family. I miss my friends who I had to leave. But being here in this place with those people has given me a lot. We have no families here, but we found ourselves somehow like relying on each other as a family. So Alwyn is also the second family, and everyone here is a member of it.
Okay, start over.
Yeah. I'm with Sami, who's anxious to get to work this morning at Radio Alwyn, a Syrian radio station in exile here in a western suburb of Istanbul. And that's probably as much as I should tell you about where they're located. At Alwyn, the normal rules of broadcasting don't apply. My name's Sarah Davis, and that might be the only real name you'll hear in the course of this programme.
Hi, my name is Sami Aljundi from Radio Alwyn. I said that my name is Sami Aljundi, but actually this is not my real name. A lot of us Syrians who are working in the media are using alternate names, especially the people who has their families in the areas where the regime is still in control, so it's not safe for them. I'm walking towards the radio. It's an old fashion building, if we can say. We don't have elevator. It's in the second floor. This is the nice thing about Alwyn. Everybody has keys, so it's like home. And welcome to Alwyn office. Please come in.
I can smell the smoke.
Yeah. Because we're close to the kitchen.